And again, just so we remember everyone who's here, we have Greg Murphy down at the end, Norman LeBlanc, Bill Lovett, Jonathan Lashowitz, Morris Robinson, and Matthew Morris. So the first question that we have from the audience, we'll talk about first. I'm going to just read the whole thing. Taxpayers in the 2009 OVDI, taxpayer has a joint account with spouse in the UK to which has been deposited non-reported, non-tax rental income. Under the 2009 OVDI, the IRS wants to base penalty to include 20% of the fair market of the UK apartment. The UK apartment is owned 100% by the spouse, who is has an H-1 visa, so it's a non-US citizen, but the taxpayer and spouse file joint returns. How would you advise this client?
The spouse bought this property before the marriage, is that right?
Correct.
Okay. But they're both paying the mortgage.
The rental income that was feeding into this joint account, in essence, paid the mortgage.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay, so first of all, if the rental income was reported in the UK,
it was not.
So, you know, there's the problem. If they weren't reporting the income in any country, I think, there's a problem because the governments will also share the information on this. So, the question was, what to do?
Yeah. How would you advise this client?
I think it was pretty clear that the house was not purchased with illicit funds. So including the house as part of the penalty structure, I think, has gone too far. I think that's pretty easily defensible.
I think if you're doing it, the payment of the mortgage, the illicit funds constitute an acquisition.
That's non-compliant income. The rental income hasn't been reported. It's going into the equity of the home. It's arguably could be considered, you know, is included in the penalty base for penalty purposes.
It's crazy for a tax.
Well, if you're in the initiative, and I assume you are. Hypothetical client.
2009.
I think you need to get in a position to negotiate something with the IRS. I mean, this has shades of criminal forfeiture. That if you use, criminally derived proceeds to purchase an asset, they can forfeit the asset. Mm. That's where this is coming from. But unfortunately, if you're in the initiative, the agents have zero flexibility.
Right. That's what I'm getting.
You may make a great argument, and the agent may say, that's a great argument, but I don't have any flexibility. I have to include it. In that case, then, assuming you're comfortable that you know all the facts, you may want to say to the agent, I want to opt out of the initiative. I want, I want the ability to make my pitch and to appeals to, try to get this penalty down to a reasonable amount and, come up with a proposal, maybe something that incorporates, a portion of those payments that weren't reported. You're not going to be kicked out of the voluntary disclosure program. So you're not going to be subject to criminal prosecution, but you do have the ability to negotiate with the IRS. And one thing, it's probably worth mentioning, the FBAR penalty is not a Title 26 penalty. It's not under the Internal Revenue Code. So tax court doesn't have jurisdiction over it. If you're not happy with an FBAR penalty, you can't go to tax court. And I'm not sure to what extent the appeals officers have jurisdiction over it, although I think they do have some. The way it works is the penalty gets assessed, and then the IRS needs to go to the Department of Justice and try to reduce the penalty to a judgment in federal district court so they can try to collect the money. They're not going to do that for everybody. And it's only then you really get the chance to contest the validity of the penalty. So that's just something else to keep in mind.
Thank you. Presumably, one of the first rents that haven't been reported, what about the net? Rental expenses, depreciation, and so forth.
Yeah, a lot of clients, think it's a great idea not to be prosecuted criminally, and then they see the bill and say, wait a minute, I didn't sign up for this. So I think a lot of people are at that point right now.
If you're opting out, you should ask, you know, what would the exposure be under a full-scale audit? I mean, you just have, this is the basic question I think you have to ask.
And so in order to figure that out, I think you have to figure out what is the tax liability likely to be. As was pointed out by Mark just a second ago, you've got the rental income. You've also got a number of expenses, including depreciation. It is very possible, after including depreciation, that there's very little left in the way of actual tax liability. And I think that there's a, in fact, I know that there's a piece of the 2011 OBDI, which basically says, if you don't owe additional tax, you're not going to be subject to a penalty. And so I'd be very, very interested in finding out what the amount of the additional tax is, if anything. And if additional tax is relatively small, maybe $100 or $200 a year, I think that that could be used for mitigation purposes. You basically say, hey, we never intended to stiff either the UK government or the Internal Revenue Service. What we figured that the tax was approximately zero, and it turned out that we were wrong. It's $200, but have a little bit of common sense here. And so you would be asking for mitigation under these circumstances. It's an interesting question. It's a very simple situation, but it has a complicated answer.
It may be a strange situation where it may be beneficial to volunteer the UK tax if you needed enough to credit to bring that down to zero.
That's an excellent idea, because if you paid the UK tax, then you would presumably have a foreign tax credit.
Another thing would be, was the non-citizen spouse ever a U.S. resident for tax purposes, or they were just voluntarily on the U.S. tax return?
So she's been living here, just on an H-1, married, and filing a joint return for better tax rates, not realizing that, hey, this is my worldwide income here.
When you say on an H-1, a long period of time here?
Yes,
okay.
20-plus
on that, okay.
I just want to raise one point. So you said that taxes weren't paid in Great Britain.
Correct.
Right. So in that situation, you would not be entitled to use the accrual basis. You wouldn't be able to check the box for using the accrual basis on the foreign tax credit form on the 1116.
What if they come forward and file with the UK?
It has to be paid, I think, within 2 years. I think there's a rule in Section 904, I forget which section it is, but you have to pay the tax within 2 years. So it's not just accrued without payment. It has to be accrued and paid within 2 years.
Matthew, I double-checked that. I think that's a normal rule here. What's happening is you're filing late, and I think that I just double-checked that.
Okay. We have situation number two. Taxpayer is a dual U.S. and Israeli citizen, lived in the U.S. since he was very young. After graduating college in 2003, he moved back to Israel and worked there for 4 years. Then he moved to Taiwan and worked there for 3 more years. Now moving back to the U.S. with his new spouse. He's not filed a U.S. tax return since he left the United States in 2003. He has foreign bank accounts in Israel and Taiwan. He must file a 2010-1040 to secure imminent visa for his spouse. He stopped filing in 2003 because he had no intention to return to the U.S. He doesn't want to pay the 25% penalty. What would you tell this person?
It's like an OBDI final exam question.
Okay. So for the years living in Israel, I'm pretty sure the tax rates there will end up being higher. So filing for those years, he probably has given up his ability to use the foreign earned the 90-some-odd thousand-dollar deduction, but for the foreign tax credit he can still use. So I think the years in Israel should be fine in terms of no taxes owed.
I don't know the Taiwanese tax rates, but I think you have to go through the calculations. You have to go back, do the returns, and see, first of all, is there any tax liability? I'm guessing if the tax liability is really low, don't put them in OVDI, silent disclosure, and present the tax returns. If any taxes are due, make sure they get paid as soon as possible.
Or the alternative is, and I don't know if this has been cleared, you could do the voluntary disclosure pre-clearance and then just tell the IRS you're not interested in the offshore voluntary disclosure initiative, there's no tax due here, here are the FBARs, here are the returns showing no tax due, no penalty should be imposed.
Well, this, if you'll recall when I spoke at the beginning, I said that in terms of the structure, step one is to figure out what the taxes are, prepare the tax returns, and so on. If there is no tax due, there is no OVDI penalty. And in this particular case, there may be two reasons why there's no tax due. First, if a person is a U.S. citizen who's residing abroad, the first $80,000 of their income is excluded. And if this is a young man, chances are he wasn't earning more than $80,000 either in Israel or in Taiwan. Second, I'm not sure of the answer, but I would assume that these people are also entitled to a foreign tax credit. So if these people file tax returns with the State of Israel and the Republic of Taiwan, then they would be entitled to the foreign tax credit. The result of both the exclusion and the credit is likely to be a zero tax liability, in which case what he would want to do is he would not be part of the 2011 OVDI. Rather, he would simply file the FBARs, and along with the FBARs, he would enclose a copy of his tax returns for the appropriate years, showing that there was no tax liability and indicating that under those circumstances, no penalty is due. To be on the safer side, if there's any kind of a whiff of a problem, I would follow what Bill Lovett suggested, and that is file the pre-clearance to get into the program, even if you think you don't need to be in it.
Yeah, one of the wrinkles in the IRS guidance, it says you're not subject to the FBAR penalty if there's no unreported income and there's no tax due. I'm not sure what position the IRS would take if there's no tax due but they haven't filed the returns. I'm not sure that the IRS would take the position that there's no penalty. Mm-hmm. Although I think you have a good faith basis to argue if there's no tax due, there shouldn't be any penalty and file the back returns. In any case, that's not a criminal case. If there's no tax due, nobody's going to prosecute someone for tax evasion. It's not going to happen.
Sir?
We've been talking a lot for dealing with the Internal Revenue Service, but I haven't seen you talk about state taxes, reporting tax returns to the state that you have previously filed. Would anyone like to take a shot at that question?
Yeah, I can. You know, the states, for the most part, are piggybacking on what the IRS has been doing. Mm-hmm. Almost all 50 states now have an agreement where they share both upstream and downstream, the information that they garner. So for the most part, if you end up with a situation where your income's going up, the states will find out sooner or later. A lot of times there's a 1 year or 2 year backlog as for all this stuff makes its way through the system, but sooner or later the states come up. A lot of states also don't have any statutes of limitation, so they can literally go back on you, even though you had filed, they can come back on you for many years in the past to make you pick up this extra tax.
Can I read something about the state charging extra if you don't disclose, if they find out from the IRS? I just read something on that.
Yeah, there are additional penalties if you don't disclose it. And I also read recently that California has come up with their own voluntary disclosure program, so I'm sure other states are sure to follow.
Sir?
I just wanted to back up one question, and I think at the beginning, Mars had mentioned this BNA webinar that took place about a week or two after this.
In February of 2011.
And that you're making reference to the chief of CI who was on the call, he had a question with respect to where you don't have any income tax because it's offset by foreign tax credits or what have you. But there's unreported income, and I believe there's a question in the frequently asked questions related to de minimis rule, de minimis income. And even if you had zero tax, but you didn't report the income, and you're in the program, that asset or account will be subject to that 25% penalty if you stay in the program. Obviously, you don't have mitigation provisions if you opt out. And I think that's what you're talking about, because why pay thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars when you probably have a very good argument to have a much lower penalty than 25%.
That's right. There's no de minimis, no such thing as de minimis income under the initiative. So it could be, you know, a dollar, and that would preclude you from being exempt from the penalty under the initiative.
Sir?
On that note, if you were not in the program and you're just doing the silent filing and you're submitting and saying, is it unreported, if you're following it with the letter, is it unreported income or is it no tax due for just being able to submit your FBAR with, to Detroit and say, you know, here's my copy of my tax return, I didn't have any tax due, or is it unreported income?
Under the guidance, it's both.
So if you have unreported, even if you had a foreign tax credit, if you had unreported income, technically you would not be the qualification for the silent filing.
Right, according to the IRS guidance. Right. Although you probably have a pretty good argument, you shouldn't be hit with 20% or 25% penalty.
Okay, well, we'll talk.
One thing, you know, this program is designed to bring people who have put assets offshore to either evade or avoid their tax obligations. Not everybody that has a foreign account is evading their taxes. But, you know, the IRS is painting with a pretty broad brush. What's going to have to happen here is there are going to have to be taxpayers that litigate these issues in order to, you know, get the IRS to modify their position, and that hasn't happened yet.
Okay, well, another question from the audience. Client owns a condo in Jamaica that he disperses funds, including rental income minus expenses, at the year end. Does he need to file an FBAR? Did I read that right, whoever submitted that?
That's correct.
Okay.
The condo hotel just collects the rents, pays the expenses, and at the end of the year disperses whatever left over to the client. I don't know something like if that's in a financial account under the FBAR.
Where does he put the money?
You're saying a management company?
It's just the company that pays the condo in Jamaica.
And so is the net paid into a U.S. bank account or into a Jamaica?
They send her a check.
They send her a check. So she doesn't have a financial account?
She does not have an account over there, no.
And she's reporting this income on her U.S. tax return?
Yes.
And she doesn't have signatory authority over the account?
The
account's a U.S. account.
So there's a management company in Jamaica with some type of account. It's not in her name. You don't know if she has signatory authority over the account.
I don't know.
Well, you'd want to find that out. If she has signatory authority over the account, then she's got to report it.
Probably as a leasing agreement with the company that they lease it, send her the net at the end of the year.
But it doesn't sound like an FBAR requirement. Incidentally, we didn't mention it, and Ken will be able to tell me the form number, but starting from 2011, there will be, if you have more than $50,000 in overseas assets, not just financial accounts, you'll have additional filing with your tax return. This doesn't replace the FBAR.
It's sort of like a super FBAR.
Super.
It begins with an A. That's right.
The company is basically all, not only do they want to know if you have a bank account or a brokerage account, now they want to know if you've got any foreign investment.
Or real estate.
The IRS form as compared to the FIRB and the Treasury form.
Exactly right.
It now gives the IRS more knowledge internally as to what the outside assets are.
Yes, that's right.
Which they're not picking up on the FIRB due to all kinds of rules and regulations as to IRS having access to it. Even though they may be imposing the penalties, they don't have access to the form.
Right, and the new form comes with its whole set of rules and additional penalties. So FBAR doesn't go away, but new foreign financial asset reporting form.
Just one additional point. When we're talking about signature authority, just to be clear, it just means the ability to control the disposition of money. If you can't control, if the client cannot control the disposition of money in an account, that's not considered signature authority.
And so if you have power of attorney over an account, even though it's not your money, you've still got to file on FBAR.
Right. So you get a lot of clients who are having signatory power for a parent who lives overseas or for a child who lives overseas or things like that. So those definitely need to be included on the FBAR.
That management situation where the condo sends her a check and she has the right to tell the condo association or the management company to direct the check to another source. Mm-hmm. She has signature authority and she may want to file an FBAR.
I don't know, you know, if it's...
I understand, but it'd be a more better position to file it with the disclosure than not file it.
I agree that filing it would be, quote, more conservative, but the management company probably consolidates all their different clients in a condo association. The management company's not going to give her the highest balance. They won't give her the account numbers. I don't know. I don't think it's an FBAR filing from what I hear.
And then we'll get to the...
Anybody have any idea how well the Charlie Rankin fence flies? I forgot about it.
It didn't go so well for him.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't depend on it.
Okay, another question. Client is in the OVDI, so I assume that's 2011?
2009.
2009, okay. $500,000 in mutual funds plus penalties and interest total $1.6 million. The client does not fall into any reduction exception. He was encouraged by UBS to invest offshore. He didn't have any criminal intent. What are his opt-out possibilities and where could opting out lead to?
Wait, what's the $1.6 million? I don't know.
That's what they want.
That's the bill?
That's the bill.
Okay.
$5 million in foreign asset in the account.
Oh, okay.
Sure. Oh, so I said $500,000. I'm sorry. It's $5 million.
Okay.
And this is part of the 09 program?
2009. So...
Right.
I don't read anything, perhaps I'm misreading, but I don't see anything concrete that there will be no criminal prosecution.
Right.
And still have non-disclosure of income, so if my client's number one goal is to just be done with everything.
Write the check.
Sounds like a good deal.
But you can opt out of the 09 program. Unlike the 011 program, my understanding is if you opt out of the 09 program, you're also opting out of the voluntary disclosure program. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even if you're in the voluntary disclosure program, there are no guarantees. But it sounds like he's been through the process. He's got far enough along where they've given him a bill. And, you know, he's going to make a decision. Does he want to litigate the issue and preserve his appellate rights, or does he want to write the check and be done with it?
But just to be clear, I mean, there still is the possibility of criminal prosecution if we locked out of 2008.
It's possible. I don't know how probable it is, depending on the facts.
They do say, they address in the frequently asked questions, they do address the issue if you opt out of the penalty portion of the OVDI.
For 2011.
2011, but I would assume it applies to 2009.
I
assume that it also applied to 2009 because the 2009 OVDP, they called it a Overseas Voluntary Disclosure Program at that point, was in addition to the normal voluntary disclosure. It wasn't in lieu of, as far as I understood. So I think it's an important point. I would be very cautious, and I would just opt out casually. The other issue is,
if I could just say it, I'd ask the agent.
The agent will make no guarantees.
No, the question I would ask is, if I opt out of the penalty structure of the 09 program, am I still in the voluntary disclosure piece of it?
I think there's another issue, and that is, and this is, it's an, incidentally, it's an excellent question. This thing goes to the whole issue of willfulness. We had somebody who had $5 million offshore. That's not $5,000, it's not $50,000, it's $500,000. It's $5 million offshore. He had presumably some significant income from that, 3% of $5 million would be $150,000 a year, $200,000 a year. Is that in the ballpark?
Yes.
So here we have a person who had a known legal duty, who intentionally disregarded it.
But most of the income is teacher income.
Well.
So if you have a client who is preparing his own taxes and not receiving any 1099s and looks at the statement and says, well, my broker who comes in from UBS every year or twice a year,
yeah,
showing me the statements and they're saying, look, Joe, the taxes are being withheld. Here you see foreign taxes withheld.
There were foreign taxes withheld?
Correct.
Okay, so in this case, this gentleman was entitled to a foreign tax credit?
Yeah, you know, minor taxes, just on the dividend.
Mm.
So, right. But, you know, when you incorporate the fee-free income, it's a different story.
Here's how I would analyze it. I think that it boils down to willfulness. If there's willfulness, then it's not going to be possible to abate the penalties. And the penalty, and I'm talking about the failure to file, failure to pay, the disclosure penalty, all of that stuff can be abated outside of the OVDP. If there is a reasonable cause and lack of willfulness. Okay? But both have to be there. Reasonable cause and lack of willfulness. Once you've got willfulness, you not only have possible criminal exposure, but you are no longer permitted to abate these penalties. And so the question that I would be thinking about is there willfulness? And in this particular case, I think that the burden of proof, while it's always on the taxpayer, is on the taxpayer big time. It is possible, if he's preparing his own return, as many people like to do, that he was simply sold a bill of goods by UBS. UBS didn't settle for hundreds of millions of dollars because they were as clean as the driven snow. So clearly, to my mind, that would be the crux of the problem, but I would be very, very cautious.
Sorry, was the taxpayer reporting the income on his tax return? You said he was filing his own taxes.
He was not.
He was not. So yeah, I think it's going to be difficult. Difficult to show non-willful.
And I would be cautious because, presumably UBS has turned over some information to the government, which may not be great for your client and may help establish willfulness. So you need to be careful.
There are a couple of forms. They just look at two meetings.
Right.
If you read it closely.
Right. So that may not be a great set of facts to opt out of the program.
Person was not knowledgeable in those forms to read exactly what was going on when the UPS did that. It is a gray area, so it's just a difficult call to make.
Yeah.
And advise them on it.
Okay, so I mean, I think the other piece of advice is, you know, do you find a defense attorney who thinks that they would be able to reasonably defend the case might be a reasonable test for, does the client just pay the penalty and try to put it behind them, or do you have something? I mean, if you can convince a defense attorney, perhaps you have something there, but I don't know.
And I get a second opinion.
Yeah. Or a third also.
Exposure to a situation like that and what the results have been.
I think there's only been, to my knowledge, one reported case where this issue of the FBAR penalty has been litigated. It's the Williams case out of Eastern District of Virginia. The government lost. So until these cases start to get litigated and there's a body of case law, it's very difficult to negotiate these issues.
Sir?
Yeah, I was just going to mention the Williams case because the taxpayer was criminally prosecuted.
Right.
But because the IRS had knowledge that he had this offshore, that's why he was found not willful for FBAR penalties.
Yeah, there's some.
That's the only case that.
Yeah, the account was actually frozen in the year that they had tried to assess the penalty, and they said, you know, it was a bad case for the government to bring, frankly, but they brought it. But, you know, the Williams case is important for another reason, and that is tax court doesn't have jurisdiction over this. So it's not, you're going to end up in front of a federal district judge who's used to seeing, you know, all sorts of cases and crimes, and they're going to look at some of these mm-hmm. cases and say, you know, it's just not here. This is an unreasonable position.
Don't you have possible Eighth Amendment rights as far as excessive penalties?
You do, although, you know, the analogy to that is the criminal forfeiture statutes. And as long as the penalty is below the maximum authorized under the statute, it's probably pretty hard to argue that the fine is excessive, although you do have that argument.
And Bill, maybe you can help me on this. I've been concerned about Eighth Amendment issues, and I just don't know how to grapple with it. Is the Eighth Amendment issue satisfied by these programs which say that the penalty under the OVDI or the OVDP cannot be greater than the sum of the penalties that are being replaced? In other words, the 50% for a willful violation of the FBAR rules and so on?
I think that's the position the IRS would take, that the reg authorizes $100,000 or 50% of the value of the account per year, whichever is greater. The ODVI is a reduced penalty structure, and therefore the ODVI does not violate the Eighth Amendment.
What do you think?
If you get the right case and the right judge, you might get some traction, but you know, these cases are very fact-specific, and everyone has a different story, and you have to evaluate them and consider how your argument's going to play to, you know, in the first instance, a revenue agent, an appeals officer, and then ultimately a Department of Justice attorney and a judge. The Department of Justice is not going to take every one of these cases and try to reduce them to a judgment. I mean, their resources are even more limited than the IRS. So it's not clear to me what's going to happen if somebody says, I don't agree to it. And, you know, they're going to have to pick and choose which cases they want to pursue.
Any other questions? All right, we've got a couple more fact patterns we could talk about. For example, suppose you have two clients that come in back-to-back, 3 o'clock and 3:30. One has $1 million in income that he's not reported for 2003, and the other has $100,000 of income that he has not reported for 2003 to 2010. How do you treat these cases differently? Do you advise them differently? Do you put one in the program and take one out? Any advice to any panelists?
first thing I'd want to know is what's the source of the funds? Is it taxable? I assume it is. Is it a legal source? Is it an illegal source? What were the circumstances under which it wasn't reported? Where is the money now? You'd want to know all those things before you, advise the client.
To dovetail off Bill's point, one of the things that you got to look at, too, is the character. In other words, was it wages? Was it self-employment income? Was it from an overseas business? Those are all taxed differently, the foreign tax credit or expatriate exclusions. All those things apply at different levels. So if you don't look at the character of the income, you're not going to be able to determine how much tax exposure they have. For example, a lot of times people will go overseas and they'll work as a subcontractor for some big company. Well, that's subject to self-employment tax. Now, there's some tax treaties that will offset self-employment tax if there is a retirement tax in that country, but not all countries have that type of treaty. So again, you're back to country by country fact pattern, looking at the treaties, looking at the character of income, and kind of unraveling all that, and then you get to the point where you can say, hey, you need to go this way or that way.
And to Norman's point, the best defense to a criminal tax case isn't necessarily, it's not willful or I didn't mean it, the Charlie Rangel defense. There's no tax due and owing here. If you have funds and you can characterize the income one way or another under the tax code, one way it's taxable, one way it's not. And it's a gray area. You have cases going both ways, and tax court cases going both ways. That's a great defense because you can eliminate that element of the offense in a criminal case. You can put on evidence, hire one of you all to come up and say, in my opinion, this could have been treated this way under these cases and this statute. And that completely undercuts the government's case in a criminal tax case. So really, the characterization of the funds is key, not only for a criminal case, but also for a civil case.
And also the amount of the liability is key, because as I understand it, Bill, the actual criminal penalty, whether a person is going to do a serious jail time, or whether they're going to get probation, or whether they're just going to get a slap on the wrist, really depends upon the amount of the tax liability. If at the end of the day there's no tax liability, I think that under the sentencing guidelines, there's no sentence.
Right. I mean, in all these cases that we've seen, all these FBAR cases that have been prosecuted, most of the defendants do not go to jail. If you look at the Schiavo case, which is in the materials, they allege he didn't report $40,000 in tax. I would guess that he's not going to jail for $40,000. I think there's been one client who has gone to jail who was a hedge fund manager. The amount of money was high. He got a year. But by and large, the clients that have been prosecuted get probation. That doesn't hold true for people like Bradley Birkenfeld and some of the other promoters, but by and large, the clients have been able to escape jail time, which I think is a bad message for the IRS to be sending. It's better to do 5 cases with long jail sentences than 50 cases where everyone gets probation, at least in my view.
I think for these two cases, you also have to find out more about the taxpayer. I mean, is this a U.S. citizen who's, grown up in the United States and, took some money over to Switzerland, set up a account at UBS, and then, started basically shielding money from tax in this account? I mean, that's one situation. Or what if you have a completely different situation with a non-resident alien who's filing a 1040 NR every year, is basically only responsible for reporting, effectively connected U.S. source income, and then later becomes a permanent resident, and it starts the requirement of reporting your worldwide income. That seems like a better, an example in which reasonable cause might come into play when you're thinking about the penalties.
How do you know when you have a criminal case on your hands?
The revenue agent stops calling. I'm serious. If the IRS starts a criminal case, it will stop any civil activity. So if you're engaged in an audit and all of a sudden they just drop off the face of the earth, you should be concerned. The other way you know is if you get a summons. I'm sure everybody has seen a summons, and somebody signs it at the bottom and they're a special agent. That's another way to know. IRS can investigate cases administratively and issue summonses, and they often do. And the other way you know is if you get a grand jury subpoena. And one thing that's worth mentioning, it's in the materials, that the IRS and the Department of Justice have taken the position that if somebody has a foreign bank account, then they're required to maintain records under the Code of Federal Regulations. And they are issuing grand jury subpoenas to taxpayers who they know have foreign bank accounts, requiring them to produce these records. Now, you might say, don't you have a Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination? And you do. But the Department of Justice has taken the position that under the required records exception to the Fifth Amendment, taxpayers can be compelled to produce these records, which then would later be used to prosecute them. And it's frankly scary. There have been two cases where district judges have bought the Department of Justice's argument and ordered that the records be produced. There's a third case in the pipeline now that was argued in Houston last week, where the judge seemed to maybe go the taxpayers' way. But this is an important issue because it could, you know, effectively eliminate the Fifth Amendment in a criminal tax case. If the government can, issue subpoenas to taxpayers and get the documents that are later used to prosecute them. And I think it's an important issue and probably will reach the Supreme Court at some point. And that's why when you get these cases, if the taxpayer has foreign bank account records and you're not sure where the case is going, if the records are in your possession, that's fair game to the government. If the records are in the taxpayer's possession, then it's a little more difficult for the government to actually get them. But, it's an important issue because I'm not sure there'd be much left of the Fifth Amendment after,
this. That includes whether the records are in the hands of a CPA or in the hands of the taxpayer's attorney.
Right. So normally what happens is the bank records themselves are not privileged. You know, they're third-party records, so the IRS issues a grand jury subpoena to the bank. Well, they can't really do that to a foreign bank. So the next best thing, well, let's give the taxpayer the subpoena. And it's really disconcerting, actually, that they're going down this road, but they are.
Sir?
With respect to the records that we turn over for the OBDI, the letter you get back after you submit the disclosure letter, the second paragraph says there's no guarantee.
Right.
No. In essence, are we making admissions for a potential criminal case?
Yes.
Scary.
You need to know your case, and if you're going to, I tell the clients, if you're going to lay your cards on the table, you got to lay them all on the table. You can't lie to the IRS. You have a lot of clients that come in and say, well, you know, it really wasn't my money, it's family money, or, and, you know, honestly, when you're in the OBDI, it doesn't matter to the agent where it came from. It doesn't make it better saying that it's family money. You're still going to get the 20 or 25% penalty. But if you're going to lay your cards on the table, you got to lay them all on the table. You know, like Schiavo, you get prosecuted when you don't do that.
Is that what happened?
I think he was probably under criminal investigation all along, and he was trying to make it better, but I don't know for sure.
Sometimes people can sort of, if they're experts in an area, they can sort of read between the lines.
Right.
All right, we'll take one more fact pattern, then we'll wrap it up. taxpayer has unreported retirement accounts of $100,000, I think we briefly touched on this, but an unreported foreign bank account of $10,000 requiring an FBAR filing. Is there any difference in how you approach this client as opposed to another one that only has money in a $100,000 in a regular old bank account?
We're working on a case like this where there's no additional income tax associated with the retirement account because the retirement account is covered by a foreign tax treaty. There was some additional interest income on the savings accounts. You know, it's like a savings and a checking account. And so there was income tax noncompliance associated with the checking and savings. This client wanted to come forward in the 2011 OBDI and, you know, report all these accounts. So we prepared, or he actually prepared the original FBARs for all the years and amended tax returns listing the income from these foreign checking and savings accounts. Not, you know, there was nothing subject to, you know, income tax with respect to the retirement account. And we drafted a letter basically to the IRS explaining that the value of the retirement account should not be included in the penalty calculation. It shouldn't be included in the calculation of the highest aggregate balance in the account because there's no income tax reporting obligation with respect to this account. And I don't know. We don't know how it's going to turn out, but that's our argument. And his ultimate penalty that we calculated was, you know, he was subject to the 12.5% of the highest balance, which is about, you know, $1,200 at the end of the day. So it wasn't really that much of a penalty. But we don't know if the IRS is going to claim that retirement account should be included. And so to me, it's not a clear question. It's still an open question at this point. Okay.
I know of a few cases over in Switzerland where the accountants were able to successfully, after about a year, make it such that there were no FBAR penalties on retirement accounts. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing in the treaty with Switzerland that says that they shouldn't report income on that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was... it was tough. I had written an article for a Swiss paper on this, and I know that that was used by the agents, which, yeah, was, if they're using my articles for making up tax law, we're all in trouble. But, yeah, it's still a gray area. I kind of know what the practice is overseas in doing it, but, yeah. The FinCEN guidance that came out in February of this year, it's pretty clear that the foreign pensions, whether it's a current company or otherwise, do need to be reported on the FBARs.
Right.
So going forward, I'm taking the most conservative position if possible. If it's a foreign account of any sort,
yeah,
just all foreign accounts in aggregate over 10,000, make sure it's on the FBAR. Mm-hmm. The worst you're going to end up then is the situation of having to fight income tax type of things, but you're not going to be facing the FBAR penalties.
Right. I think we owe it to, you know, to this client to take that account out of the highest balance calculation.
Great. Does anyone else in the audience have any questions? Thank you to the panelists.
Thank you.
And thank you to the attendees. This was a long technical program with only a short break in the middle. You folks did a great job, and you should feel pleased about that. Please remember to turn in your evaluations. They're very helpful to us in improving these programs. For CPAs who need CPE, please see Tamar outside. And thank you all for attending.
Business cards for the raffle for the Boston Business.
Whoops.
Anybody else who wants to put in their business card?
I'll put in mine.
Okay, put in yours, and then we have to have, we'll ask Donna to reach in and pick it out, okay? Do you mind, Donna?
No.
Okay.
Anyone else?